I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today. Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. One guest this week, but a fantastic one. Rebecca Quinn is the guest. You probably know her better as Becky Lynch, one of the stars of professional wrestling. I know sometimes people, like, when it comes to this media podcast, like, they're not into professional wrestling and they don't want to hear a podcast about storylines and stuff. I get it. This is one you're going to want to listen to because Rebecca Quinn has written a fantastic book on her life, and it's a fascinating life of her coming over from Ireland and getting to the top of the pyramid in professional wrestling. Her book comes out March 26th. It is Becky Lynch, The Man, Not Your Average Girl. It is a fantastic book. I cannot recommend it enough. And I think anybody listening to this podcast knows that I'm not going to recommend a book unless it's got it. Becky Lynch, of course, also will be at WrestleMania 40 coming up April 6th and 7th at Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia. She battles Rhea Ripley, who's been on this podcast before. That should be really, really good. But again, we had a great conversation on just book writing and letting, you know, a famous person letting people in, how she navigated all that. And I don't want to give too much away because I think you're really, really going to appreciate it. So 50 minutes or so with Rebecca Quinn / Becky Lynch coming up on the Sports Media Podcast. All right, as I said at the top, I mean, people who listen to this podcast know that that I'm a professional wrestling fan. I personally think it's probably your best way to understand modern politics if you study professional wrestling. That's just a tip for anybody out there. Rebecca Quinn is one of the most famous people in professional wrestling. You would know her better as Becky Lynch or The Man. She is here today as the author of a new book that debuts everywhere on March 26th, Becky Lynch, The Man, Not Your Average Girl. We'll get into the book. My review is it's pretty fucking good. I got to be honest. It's really, really well done as a memoir, and particularly well done as someone who's read a lot of wrestling memoirs. But we'll get into it. So in addition to her book, which there'll be a ton of publicity on in March, she has one of the featured matches at WrestleMania 40. Which is a two-night event, April 6th and 7th at Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia. That is a great venue for wrestling. It should be amazing. She will battle Rhea Ripley, and one would expect both of them to tear the house down. And with that, I welcome back Becky Lynch to the Sports Media Podcast. Hello, Becky.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
You're welcome. I mean all of it. Okay. I really enjoyed the last time you were here, and I appreciate you coming back. And what I tried to do with you in the last podcast, and I will do the same here, is to sort of maybe just talk about some things that are not storyline and a little bit different in terms of your interviews. Although I think now this month, because of the book, you're probably going to get a lot of the things that I'll ask you about. Before we start, though, you became a U.S. citizen this month.
I did.
Right. Congratulations. As a
thank you so much,
fellow U.S. citizen. Although I live in Canada now, so I am a very unique. I can relate to you as someone who is an expat. And so, why was this important to you? Why was it important for you to become a U.S. citizen?
Well, look, I've always you've read about this in the book. I always just had this yearning to be over in America. I felt like anything was possible if I could get over there and I could follow my dreams and all those kind of cliches about the American dream. But I think more now than anything, it's that I have an American daughter and I have an American husband and my family is American. And it's time for me to be part of that family, not just like the immediate family, but the communal family. So I had to have my green card for 5 years. And when that happened, then I applied right away.
Sweet. All right. So you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm right about this. Ireland is a, and the U.S., they accept, you're a dual citizen, correct? Of both?
Yes.
Oh, what a cutie.
Yes. Sorry.
No, that's so cute.
My daughter has just joined us.
Yes. Very, very cute. So you are both an Irish citizen and a U.S. citizen. And also you have EU citizenship, right? So you have the gold, or am I wrong about this? Because if so, you have the gold standard.
Well, if you're an Irish citizen, then naturally you can flow between the European Union country. I don't think there's a thing as like a European Union.
Right. You have EU status, yeah, is what I'm saying. All right. So
two passports.
So my point is that you can now work anywhere in the world, basically, right? You're a global citizen.
A good chunk.
I love it. Okay. A good chunk. All right. So here's, now I can't curse because of your kid is here. So I'll
oh yeah. See, I've got the headphones in.
Okay. So here's where I want to start. I really, really like this book, and I'll tell you why. It is a tricky thing, in my opinion, to write a book in which you reveal a lot about you, vulnerability, self-doubt, everything that you had to process to get to where you are today, which in my opinion, as someone who's watched you for a long time, that's an exact counter to your character, Becky Lynch, who doesn't have self-doubt, right? Who's not thinking about sort of things as much as you think about in the book. So I wonder, could you take me inside your writing process, your thought process of revealing things that go totally counter to what we basically know you most for, Becky Lynch and the Man?
Well, I think it comes down to several things. One, I always wanted to write a book. My dad always encouraged me to write. As a fan of Mick Foley, he wrote a fantastic book. So I wanted to write a book. And I always imagined the stories that would go into the book. So while I'm going through life, I'm like, oh, well, this would go in the book. This would go in the book. But when I actually came to writing the book, I think more than anything, I just had to be honest, because reading a book is an undertaking, right? You have to take the time out of your day. You have to sit down. And I didn't want to just give them something that you would see on TV. I wanted to give them something that was real, something that I was going through. And so I did do a writing course for a year. And I learned a lot about writing. And there's always the fear of like, you're going to expose yourself, but the fear is good, you know? And I think if you can be honest, I don't think it's harder to criticize somebody for their genuine feelings, because, well, that's how I feel. You can't tell me that it's wrong, because that's how I felt. And so I just wanted to be honest with everybody and how I felt during these things, because I've read a lot of other people's memoirs and everything seems so easy in their head. You know, everything seems so easy. It's like, I want to be an actor. And then I went for an audition and I was great. And, or whatever else it is. And I just wanted to show what it was like in my mind going through all of these things and the doubts and the anxieties and the fears, but overcoming them all. And the interesting thing, I think, about me, but I think that a lot of people can relate to this, is I have this weird juxtaposition of unshakable self-belief and just crippling self-doubt at the same time. and it's a weird thing. And some of it comes into wrestling. Like I said it in a promo a few weeks ago, when people believe in me, I'm good. But when people doubt me, I'm great. And that is genuinely how I feel. Like sometimes it takes me a second, you know, when I doubt myself or when people doubt myself, and I'll sit in that and I'll wallow in it for a second. And then there's just like this rage rage, or not this rage, but this like, nah, maybe it's this rage against the machine. Even if I happen to be the machine, I'm like, no, I'm not going to believe that. No, you're not going to hold me back. Yes, I am going to do whatever it is that I want. And so it's going through that that roller coaster of emotions. I think that that's very human. I think that it's just incredibly human. And so I wanted to write about my own human experience.
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you as the son of the shrink, you're a therapist's dream. So this is congratulations on that. So you, one of the things that, you have talked about, I think it's in the book too, is you had handwritten journals or journals, at least. Yep. You were someone who journaled when you were young. It seems like, teenage years as well. That could be for a memoir, really, really good source material. So I'm wondering, like, did you have access to your innermost thoughts when you were 14, 15, 16? And then in particular, because you started out in the business so young, to have had, that's what I really liked, is like, I felt you took people into what it was like to be the only woman at a wrestling school in Ireland. Like, you gave us a thought of like, oh man, like, what is it like to leave home at this young age? So I wonder, did you rely on journals that you had written, or is that all from memory?
So a lot of it is from memory. Like, I picked up my journals and I read you know, different parts, and I had my mom send me over journals that I had back in Ireland. But like, I just found like a lot of it was like giving myself pep talks. It's kind of embarrassing, but a lot of it was, you know, it was understanding myself through reading them, and understanding that the same kind of pitfalls that I would fall into. But really, more than anything, it was that, is that seeing on paper the times when I left wrestling and how much of a hole that left in me. And I was just kind of constantly trying to put on this brave face and almost lying to myself and to everybody else of like, no, it's better off. And that would be a bad thing for me to go back to. And constantly going down those rabbit holes. That was the most interesting and eye-opening thing for me.
All right, you have a busy life. You have a daughter. You have a husband in the business. Rebecca Quinn's husband is Colby Lopez, who is Seth Rollins. Again, anybody who knows anything about wrestling listening to this podcast will know who Seth Rollins is. So you know, you have a sort of a real life here, but you've got to find time to write. So when you were writing this book, like, when did that, you know, there are some writers who wake up at the crack of dawn and they'll start writing. Other people love to write.
That's not me.
Yeah. Others love to write late at night when people go to sleep. So what was it for you?
I'm just not a crack of dawn kind of person. In this house, we don't do the crack of dawn. My daughter doesn't do it. Thank God. we always laugh at those, like, success videos, and it's like, you got to get up at 4 a.m. We're like, oh, we're doing all right. no. So look, I was borrowing time, stealing time wherever I could get it. Like, there was my parents were over, and we went to like a kids' museum with my daughter, and I had my laptop, and I was sitting there watching her while she was on a bounce house. You know what? Writing. And I would just write anywhere I could, on planes, backstage at live events. Like, I was robbing time, because like I said, I'm not a morning person at all. Our career makes it certain that we become night owls. And so like, if I had the time to write at night, I would. But I also just, it was so important that I also had my family life, because I love, she goes to bed quite late. And when she goes to bed, like, I love those few hours where it's just me and Colby, and we get that time to ourselves. So I was trying not to take anything away, but just try to sneak this in. And I feel like I very much snuck a book in. I'm looking back going, like, a lot of it was written like on red eyes and things like that. Things where I was alone and just, but I would just steal an hour here or an hour there.
My guess is the process is you wrote, you, you, I think in the book, you said you had a writing team or some people sort of who help process this. How close is the final product to the first draft? Because often it's not very close.
Oh, no, not close at all. Not close at all. Oh my gosh. So different. It's so different. And no, I have an editor, but then I did a writing course. So I had that writing group, like it was like a round table and you could throw things at people and they would read it and they would give you feedback. And that was very beneficial. I did that with Neil Strauss. And so that was helpful. But yeah, no, it was when I sent in my draft to the editor and it had gone through different series and I had different editors who just weren't a right fit for me. And when I gave it to this editor and I hadn't read it back and she gave me just questions back and I like read it back and I was like, oh no, this whole thing needs to change. I need to change this whole thing. And then within like 5 weeks, and that was when I was on my NXT run. And I think we had even announced the book and I was still like, oh no, I need to change this. I need to write this. And this story needs to go, this story. And it was all the things, all these stories that I was like, oh, these are going to be great in my memoir that just had to go. They just didn't fit. They didn't fit. And it was more like, what I'm putting this in more as like, look at the things I went through as opposed to like, is this part of the story? Does this need to be in there? What? And so finding those things and chopping those things out, that's hard. That's hard because there's things that are maybe you feel like are well written. They just don't fit.
Yeah. Did you
want to? Was an interesting process.
You want to give a shout out to this to the main editor who really you worked with, or is it?
Oh yeah, Rebecca Strobel. She was great. All she right. was amazing. Once she came on board, it was off we go. And like she's so brutally honest, and I loved it. You know, she was just like, to the point, here's the thing. And like at first it would like take me a second. No, like there was no like beating around the bush. I was like, you know, come on, this is my art here. This is like put myself out there. But no, she was like straight, but that was what we needed. We didn't have time for flowery engagements, you know?
Yeah, no, you can never have a more like an honest editor is essentially everything in writing. So so good for you on that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, one of the things that's often hard for someone in your position is when someone close to you, someone that you love, your family, spouse, partner, how they're going to react to what you write. Did you show what you were writing to Colby or your brother or people, important people in your life prior to whenever it was close to the finished product?
My brother and Colby got to read it. And my brother read a very, a much earlier draft. And he liked it, but it's not even close to what it became. So if he liked it then I have a good feeling that he'd prefer it. Now, and then Colby read it in a matter of days and said he loved it. And so he was the person I was most scared to show it to. And so when he liked it, he enjoyed it and he gave me his feedback that meant the world to me. It's like, all right, maybe it doesn't. So, cause he's never lied to me. And so this was like, if he was going to lie to me, this would be the first time, but I don't think he did.
So this gets into like some specifics about the book. So one of the things, that you had to do as the writer is you have to self-edit, self-select. You got to decide what details you're going to put in about your life or not. And so I was really struck, like when it comes to your relationship, I keep going back between Colby and Seth. When it comes to your relationship with Colby, you were honest. Like you talked about like your previous relationship prior to him. You talked about what it was like to meet him on the road. You talked about all your self-doubts about should I get involved with somebody who's in the business? I mean, Jesus, Rebecca, I mean, you took us into the bedroom basically the night that your daughter was conceived. So, I mean, like, which I loved. Like, to me, I was like, this book is awesome because of that. But, you know, like, the writer has to make a decision, like, how deep they're going to take you in. And so how did you decide, like, some of the real intimate things that mean the most to you? Like, they're either going to be in here or they're not. Because to me, I think this is what separates your book. This is why I really think, like, it's really good, is that I was like, you know, she's just going to, like, go for it and, like, let us in here on, like, these really important moments of her life, you know, including, like, a relationship that people care about and want to know about, and others might keep, you know, more private. So I could have asked that more elegantly, but I think you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah. Like I said, it's just one of those things where, I love our relationship. And so I loved writing about it, but I loved all the little quirks and the false starts and the will we, won't we. That was, you know, that's always the most exciting part of a relationship. Not the most exciting, you know, you get into it, but it's such an exciting part of a relationship, is the beginning, those butterflies, those, oh, did he touch my hand? No, did he mean to do that? Is he leaving it? Like, that's all the exciting part. And so I wanted to put that in there. And show all that, and they're my favorite parts of the book, because I mean, it's my favorite part of my life is my relationship with my husband. I love it. We have such a great relationship, and it was such an interesting, fun start. And I think whenever you're, like I said, when you're writing a book, I committed to writing a book that I wanted people to read. And if you're going to do that, then you can't be wasting people's time or your own time. You know, I feel like if you're going to do this, do it right, be honest, get it out there, and make it as entertaining and interesting and honest as possible, so that people might take something from it. I don't think people are likely to take as much from it if you're lying about these things. But also, I go, it's a biography, and a biography should be honest. I wasn't writing fiction. I'm not writing a novel here. So I tried to be as upfront as possible.
Yeah, and I appreciate it. Just so people who are listening know this, like, it gets into, like, the granular of, like, you know, Colby will, like, text Rebecca and say, like, hey, can I swing by tonight? Or how do you feel about if I come over? And then she takes us into her inner dialogue of, like, should I be doing this? Should I not? Well, of course I want him to come over. Like, you don't often see this in a memoir. It's like that granular. And again, as someone who likes both of these people and is, like, interested, I was like, fuck that. You know what? Nice job, like, author. Like, you're actually taking me in here, and I appreciate that. The other thing that you had to think about is, you know, there are people who are very, very interested in, like, the relationships of people in your company and people in pro wrestling, like, who's interesting, who's talented, who's an asshole, who's not. And you're pretty honest about, like, you know, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Finn Balor, Charlotte Flair. These are who I think is probably the most interesting female relationship that you have had, given your ups and downs with her. Again, this is a choice authors have to make. How did you determine, when it comes to the people who you work with, these professional colleagues, like, what you're going to sort of let the public in on?
Yeah, so I think with certain people like Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Fergal, they're all easy because they're such close friends, and they've been such an important part of my life. Charlotte Flair has also been such an important part of my life, but we've had the fallings out and the thing. But I think what was important to me was to make sure that I told it from as much as possible, that part, being able to see her side in it, as opposed to just telling my side. Because the other part of a book and a biography is that when you're writing it about other people, they don't get the chance to defend themselves. And you need to be fair in that and see it from, okay, well, this is how I felt, but how much of that was fair, and how much of it was, let me see their point of view. So I think with writing about Charlotte, because we have had those fallings out. That was a tricky one to write about without me burying her, I suppose. You know what I mean? Like with I wanted to be able to see her side of it. And really, more than anything, at the core of it, because I have in interviews, you know, I've done all that, but in this book, I just wanted to show the realness of the relationship. Because between our ups and downs, the undercurrent, there's always love, especially on my end. There's always been this thing, like when you feel hurt more because you love this person. And I think that's ultimately what it is. And so I tried to show that, and hopefully I did show that, and didn't paint her in a bad light, because I don't think that's fair to do in a book.
Yeah, I would say there's nobody in this book that you absolute buried, but I think you are honest about like your processing of a lot of different relationships. That gets me to this question. People are going to read this, obviously, in WWE, and for sure. I don't want to say like, are you concerned? Because like, you wrote the book, like you live with the book and you live with your choices, but are you curious about like how some of the people you write about in the book, process the book, given that they're in it?
Yes, 100%, 100%. And people's interpretations of events are going to be different than my interpretation of an event. Like I said, I do try to be very fair. I try to more point the finger at me when it's applicable and possible, than pointing the finger at everybody else. And I do try to do that a lot in life in general, sometimes a little bit to a fault. But when it comes to it, like I remember Neil Strauss in this writing course saying to me, like, you have to tell your experience the way that you remember it, the way that you believe it, but it's never going to be the big things that upset people. It's going to be something that you didn't even think about, that they go, well, what? I don't have blonde hair. My hair is a sandy brown. It's not that, but you can't account for what people will take offense to. And so, yeah, I guess I can't account for what people will take offense to.
Yeah, he's correct on that. Anybody who's worked in journalism, you would be so surprised at what you could write a piece that's not necessarily positive about somebody, but yet what they're really upset about is far from often what you think they're going to be upset about. So he's, and Neil Strauss, obviously, best-selling author, et cetera. He's dead right on that. Are you excited about doing a book tour versus what is a traditional kind of wrestling press junket for WrestleMania?
Yeah, I am. This is like a new layer of excitement, because I've gotten to do the tours as Rebecca Quinn or as Becky Lynch. And this is my first tour as Rebecca Quinn, really. And that's exciting. That's exciting, seeing what that is like. And, you know, I've put so much work into this and, you know, put my heart and soul into writing this book and seeing how people receive it and people coming out to meet me. I don't know. There's something a little bit different about them coming out to see Becky Lynch. Of course, they're coming out to see Becky Lynch, but in a way, I feel like they're coming out to see Rebecca Quinn. And that feels very real and surreal to me.
So this, I kind of love this question, because it's like not something you normally get. So anyone who's doing a book would kind of like be like, oh, I want to do NPR, or I want to do these kind of like intellectual kind of like press places, where if you're doing WrestleMania, it's like, you know, get me on ESPN or get me on whatever. So do you know already, are you doing anything that is very bookish that you would never have done as Becky Lynch, but now you get to do as Rebecca Quinn?
Oh, gosh. Oh, I don't know. I don't actually know. I'm looking at my schedule and going, okay, one day at a time. Because, you know, already with WrestleMania coming up, you have so many appearances. And then on top of the book tour, so many appearances. So I think at one point they put them all in front of me. And I think I just did like this grand overhaul look at it. But I don't know that. I think I very much have to go one day at a time. I don't think there's anything super bookish. But if anybody super bookish wants to come at me, please come out.
Contact. Okay.
Selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, I got about, you good for another, let's say, 10 to 12 minutes? Are you okay?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, I think I'm actually good for another 25 minutes.
All right, I'm gonna keep you 17 hours, which is going to do the, we'll read the book together, basically. All right. So you are someone, this is something I really respect about your career. You are someone who has always embraced doing media. You whether it's like local radio station, whether it's Good Morning America, like you really don't discern, which I have always come to respect about you. Now, this is just me playing amateur therapist, psychologist here. If I had to guess the reason you do this, it's because after reading the book, you wrestled when no one gave a shit. You wrestled in front of places where nobody was there. And I think it must be to me, like there's a part of you that is still sort of driven by like, now if people are interested in my story and my art, and I'm going to give myself the time to do that. You know, you had your hard times, daddy, like basically life. And now that you're in a different place, but I feel like you're always thinking about that place. And you can tell me if I'm wrong, but that's my thought on this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. But you know, I also love it, you know, cause when I get to go out and do media, then I get to talk about wrestling. And I love talking about wrestling. I talk about how great I am. And it goes away from my inner dialogue, and it's wonderful. But no, maybe if you want to go back to playing therapist here, like there was that line in the book, there's far too many blonde beauties for anybody to be looking at you. And I think there is no line that was said to me that has plagued me more in my life than that, and driven me more in my life than that. And so when I get the opportunity to go out there and talk and put myself out there, hell yeah, I'll do it. Don't gotta be blonde.
I remember that line. And I thought that struck me out. It's the same that stayed with me, as did your explaining to people why like a fake result in a fake match absolutely, like in a fake thing, like matters so much and ultimately becomes real. And that's sort of in some ways the entire sort of magic of this stuff. But yeah, I appreciate you answering that, because that makes a lot of sense. You know, one of the things when it comes to your current life is that you, you know, your spouse, your partner, is also in your position in many ways, like understands the business, has the same sort of ups and downs and thoughts. And so I wanted to ask you, like, you know, there must be an immense amount of positives to being married to a fellow professional wrestler. What are the positives? And then are there negatives because it's too much and becomes too overwhelming?
I think the positives far, far, far outweigh the negatives. Which ones do you want first?
I'll take either. Take both.
Let me start with the negatives, actually, because then we'll end on a high note. So the negatives can be, you're so close to it, right? That I remember it was the other day, and the way Colby processes things, he's very straight face, right? And that's just him in general. He's just so level. And I remember giving him this idea and being super excited about it. And he's just there thinking about it, just giving me no emotion. He goes, "And then what?" I'm like, "And then what? That was a great idea." You know, so it's like when you're talking about ideas that you're so close to, that you become so emotionally involved in, and you want the reaction in a certain way, and maybe you don't get it, or they're processing it a different way, then you become heightened in that. And so these are like very minutia negatives, because with anybody else, you can't even talk about that. They won't even understand. They'll go, "Oh yeah, that sounds great," but they're just giving you lip service because they don't understand the ins and outs of it. And then there's the other part of it, the jealousy part of it, because wrestling is this, it's waves. And so sometimes you're up, sometimes your partner's up, sometimes you're down, sometimes you're in many ways, we're both in this to be the top star, the top guy. And so we're kind of competing with each other. And I think in the beginning that was harder than it is now. You know, now it's wave. And that's a bit of a negative, but we're very very well able to talk about it and to communicate that and to understand that and these vulnerabilities and express that. And I think that's the most important part. So they're the negatives, which just, you know, they're slightly negative. The positives is nobody understands this business like he does. And he is also has just such a great mind for it. And I think I have a pretty good mind for it. And the fact I have a great mind for it. What am I talking about? I have a great freaking mind for it. And so we're able to bounce these ideas off each other so that we can become better. And then we both love this and we're both obsessed with this. And other people might not understand that. And then we get to travel as a family. Like, we get to bring our 3-year-old daughter on the road. She gets to experience this. We get to do everything together. We get to experience. And for some people, that might be too much time together. For us, it's not. It's just not a thing. He's my best friend. It's easy. It's easy. It never feels like, oh, I need time by myself. I can get time by myself. I wander off in the building and I talk about my match and I don't see him for the day. And then we come back at night and then we can talk about everything. And it's just great. It's great. There's a reason that there's so many wrestling couples together.
Yeah, that's cool. It's great to hear, like, you talk about your partner like that. You can tell it's genuine, which is nice. The last time you were on this podcast, I talked to you about social media. I was not bullshitting you. I think you are the best to ever use social media in the business in terms of how to forward storylines, in terms of getting yourself over in a medium. But I know you've also talked about this. Like, social media can be a toxic hell. So it's very important to you as a sort of in a business perspective. At the same time, it can be, you don't want this stuff in your head because you need to perform. And so how, especially as it's something like Twitter's gotten really a lot worse, like how do you navigate this now? Like, do you post and just leave? Like, what's your do you have a process here?
Yeah. Post and go, because we're in this world where, man, we used to leave bullies on the playground. You know what I mean? Like, you were 18, you were out of school, you might experience like a shitty manager, you know, that you felt was mean to you. You don't experience the negativity and the stuff that people say to you these days is just horrendous. And if you sit there, if you dwell on it, it'll just ruin your mind. And I have had so much going on in the last couple of years, between being a mother, between being a full-time wrestler, between being an author, other engagements, like acting projects, different things. that something has to give. And if that something has to give, it's social media, all right, so long. Because you can post, you can promote, but you cannot sit there and entertain this negativity, this abuse that gets thrown at us and to anybody. And we're also just, as human beings, not designed to take that. We're not. Like, if you were to if you were to walk out into the village and 10 people start hurling insults at you, you know, you'd go back inside and you'd be like, what is happening? What did I do? You have to reevaluate your whole sense of purpose and your whole sense of self. That's what's happening in social media, except it's coming out in the tens, in the hundreds, in the thousands of people's opinions of you. And we're just not designed as people to process that. And I think it doesn't matter who you are. I think it will affect you if you let it. And so I think the key is to not let it. The problem is that there is an immense amount of positivity out there too. And if you shut yourself off from the negativity, you also have to shut yourself off from the positivity too. And that can be good and bad, you know, but I think the thing is that shit sticks. So you might see 10 positive comments, but the one thing that will stick with you is the negative. So yeah.
This is I don't know what it is about human nature, but you know, in my world as a sports writer, it's the same thing. You get 50 people to say this piece was great. If it's one or two that say you suck, why is that the thing that stays with you? Like, even percentage wise, it shouldn't make sense, but it's something about human nature. And I think
it's a survival thing, isn't it? You know what I mean? Like you're designed to process whatever your errors are so that you can fix them, so that you can survive in the tribe. You know what I mean? I think that's what it is. I don't know. I'm not like a scientist or nothing like that, but I'm just...
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, a couple more. Will you continue to write? The book is out, and I know, and I don't mean just like, I know you're right, you know, you write somebody an email, but I'm saying like, are you now struck by, you know, I have some other things maybe I want to say, and maybe it's not book form, but maybe it's in poetry, or maybe it's like a short story, or maybe it's like a short magazine piece. Like, where do you stand now having, you know, put this thing out?
I think so. I love writing. And that, like, it's one of those things. I write my own promos, you know, and so you're always writing pieces and like monologues and a one person show, if you will, constantly. And I love that. I do love that. Like, for example, like, people's processes are different. Colby never writes anything down. He just thinks of it and stores it in his brain. I need to see it in paper. I need to like see the through line of a story, of a promo. He's different in that regard, but I love the writing process. I love the seeing it, the chopping it away, the editing, the moving things around, the how does this fit to make a good story. I love that. And I think it's something that I don't suck at. So I will continue to do it.
Yeah. The one thing that I have to say, I mean, this is never going to happen to me, that I am very, very envious of you and Colby is, and you wrote about this, it was Triple H, you called it, something crack, was it like enthusiasm? What was it?
Excitement crack.
Excitement crack. Okay. The feeling of like walking out of the curtain and like hearing that audible pop. And especially, let's say, if you were in like a massive mega stadium where there's 80, 90,000 people, that's not duplicate. I mean, I've talked to a lot of athletes and, you know, they hear the crowd and like, you know, they know what it's like. You score a touchdown in the Super Bowl and like you hear the din, but it's different. What you guys do, honestly, there's no duplicative thing in entertainment or sports like that. For, you know what I'm saying? That first second, that pop, it's unbelievable. And I can understand why you're always chasing that. That makes sense.
Yeah. And that's the interesting thing about wrestling. Like in sports, you're not designing your game so that the crowd is going crazy. You know, you can't. You're just playing to win. With this, with wrestling, it's designed specifically so that we can elicit that response from the people. So when you do, there's nothing like it. Then you're winning. That's winning.
All right, I'm gonna get you out of here in 5 minutes. I would be remiss not to ask this, and I ask this knowing that you are talent. You are not an executive at WWE, so people should sort of know this. You've also sort of been asked similar questions, but Vince McMahon's a big part of this book. And in the book, Becky, he comes off pretty supportive for the most part of your career. I mean, it's not always easy to deal with in the book, and you again. So I recommend this book. Rebecca's very honest about these interactions with Vince McMahon. But generally speaking, he, and certainly Stephanie McMahon, massive supporters of your career. The book very clearly was done prior to the allegations that came out about Vince. So I wonder just how do you navigate those allegations with the person, you know, you wrote about in the book and in many ways put you in a main event position?
I suppose the thing is that they're horrendous allegations. They're horrendous. And it's so hard to listen to and reconcile with because you don't know that person. The person that I've experienced was like a granddad, you know, like he at times a very grumpy granddad, and one that you're frustrated with, but one that was so supportive of me and my family and of my career and encouraging and understanding as well at times. And then you hear this different side of it. And also is just very responsible for one, for the dream that I had, right? The fact that there is a WWE, and for then allowing me to live my dream, and for meeting my husband, for my whole family, everything that I have. And then you hear these allegations and you can't connect it. It's hard to connect the two. Like in many ways, they just feel like two different people, and so trying to see them as one person, it's very hard. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to reconcile with.
Do you think it's going to take you and Colby probably a lot of time to process it? It's not an easy thing to do in a small time period, anyway.
No, it's not. It's not. It is very difficult. Because it's, like I said, it's somebody that was so close to you, has given you so much, and you're a woman in this business who has been so driven for change, and so forward in that, and so ambitious in that you wanted to change this. And you got to do this, and then you hear these things, and it's you want everybody to have the experience that you have, and when they don't, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking, and it's difficult, and it's not anything that you want to hear about. That's it. It's just very hard. It's just very hard when it's somebody that's so close to you too.
Yeah.
Or that has been so close to you.
I appreciate you answering. Thank you. So the final three here, sort of on a more uplifting note, you went to the White House. Were you able to bring your book to the White House? One thing I was thinking, like when I saw photos of you there, I was like, I don't know if Becky could do this without maybe Secret Service, like saying don't do that, but like maybe just like drop the book in like a cool shelf or something like that.
No, I left it in the library.
I love that. Do you know what it was? Do you know what it was next to? Like what books it might have been?
Like, I have a picture.
Yeah, like next to like Franklin Delano wrote, like some famous like historian book. I love the fact that your book would be next to that.
So it's next to it's kind of Smith's the. budgetary process in the United States, and Zohar, and Jefferson and his time, the sage of, so.
How great
is it? So these, these are the books.
If like the president's
The Life and Times of William Howard Taft.
Yeah, former U.S. Yeah. president. How great would it be, by the way, if like staff is just going through it and they're like, you know, they have to get some kind of, you know, really high end, like important historical book. And then they see yours and they're like, damn, man, this looks like a lot more fun reading to me than like the history of William Howard Taft.
That is my hope.
I think it's going to happen.
That is my hope and goal.
Did you autograph? Did you leave it wasn't an autograph copy.
I didn't autograph it, though. That was a miss by me. That was a miss. I missed there.
I love that, though. Genius move by
you. It is in the library. Well, it was. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens in like a week or so.
This entire interview is going to be transcribed like literally the second it comes out. So you've created at least five different news cycles in this interview. So thank you. And I won't get it. Trust me, I'll get no page views out of it. It'll be long gone. All right. So the last one is this. I love this question, like for you. This is one like I thought about when you were going to come on. Okay. You've met a lot of very, very well-known people, just given your travels, you're a professional wrestling star, you know, your husband, the same thing. So you've met a lot of famous people. That's just the reality of it. You go through any of Rebecca's feeds, you'll see that. That said, give me one or two people you would love to read this book, just for whatever reason. Not your family, not your friends, like somebody like really well-known, and then just I want the why.
Eddie Vedder.
Oh, I love that.
I'm a huge Pearl Jam fan, you know. And I think as a lot of Pearl Jam fans and Eddie Vedder fans find themselves asking, what would Eddie do? You know, like I think you look at Eddie Vedder and he's somebody who seems to have a great moral compass.
Yeah.
And seems to stand for all the right things. And so I would like him to read it. And then who would be another person that I would like to read it? I don't know. That's the first and foremost. Maybe Lady Gaga.
Yeah. Get a photo of like her with a book would be sweet.
She rocks.
Yeah. She's good.
Killian Murphy too.
Oh yeah. You're right.
Killian Murphy. Oh, what a hero.
I know.
What a talent.
What about Katie Taylor, the great boxer from your country?
Oh yeah. 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 She's lovely. She's lovely.
I think she would.
But the other people I mentioned are people I haven't met.
No, I know. Yeah. I once.
But Killian Murphy. Yeah. I'm going to go with Killian.
I actually
think we share the same agent. Just
Look at that name drop. I once asked, this was like really cool. I once asked Magic Johnson if there's anybody he wanted to meet who he hadn't met. And he said, no. How cool is that? When you've met everybody, like if you're that well known. So you still have.
That's very cool.
I bring that up because there's still people for you to experience and meet. Which is good.
Yes.
Something to look forward to. All right. Let's get the promos back. Rebecca Quinn has given me more time than, quite frankly, like the longest WrestleMania match. So she's very, very sweet to do this. The book is Becky Lynch, The Man, Not Your Average Girl. It is out everywhere March 26th, you know, local bookstores, Amazon, Goodreads, etc. There is, for what I've seen, a little bit of a book tour where you're speaking at some bookstores, which you will love,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, in Washington, D.C., actually.
Yeah, it's cool. And then obviously, you know, and what are we doing? March. So yeah, we're not so far away. WrestleMania, April 6th and April 7th at Lincoln Financial Field, WrestleMania 40. It's Becky Lynch versus Rhea Ripley, who's been on this podcast before and is, again, another fantastic, transcendent person and star. They'll be doing battle, and my guess is they'll probably steal the show. Well, I can't really say that because obviously Seth Rollins is in it, so I don't want to play favorites on this particular interview. You could not have been more generous with your time. This is, you know, you've done Good Morning America and these major places. I mean, no offense, but this is not going to help your career at all, this dopey, stupid podcast of mine. So I appreciate very much you coming on and doing this. Rebecca Quinn / Becky Lynch, thank you. The book is fantastic. I was so psyched to have gotten an early advance of it, and it was what I thought it would be. I knew I just Having interviewed before, knowing a little bit about your story, I knew you would actually bring something to people and let people in. And you did that. So you should feel really good about this. You know, I don't work for you. I'm not being paid to kiss your ass. I'm just telling you as an objective person, it's good. And you should be proud as a writer.
Thank you. I am quite proud. I'm very proud. I think this is like possibly the most proud I've been of a piece of work that I've done.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
All right. Becky Lynch, everyone. All right. Back in the studio. My thanks to Becky Lynch. Cannot thank her enough. I mean, that's a lot of time for someone in her position to give, and it's much appreciated. Head to the archives. A ton of media stuff. We just, the podcast prior to this one, Jack McCallum, who wrote a terrific piece on Crispus Attucks High School, had a mini pod about how many viewers will watch the NCAA tournament with Austin Carp and John Lewis, Louisa Thomas in the New Yorker, Pablo Torre, recent guest on this podcast, Andrew Marchand, Peter King, Sue Bird. Again, the list goes on. Want to thank Patrick Antonetti for his hard work. Thanks to everybody at Odyssey for their support. I want to thank you, of course, for listening. And we'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League Podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.